Welcome to the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by JosephAuto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, every Tuesday, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers take you inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Hear from players, coaches, and anyone else relevant to the team throughout the week. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or listen on our must-have Bengals app. Let's go.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of the Bengals Beat Podcast, the BBP. Paul Dater Jr., Jib Osarski, your Bengals beat writer for the Cincinnati Inquirer. All apologies. It's been a long day for us. Mine started at about 4 a.m. in Buffalo, and you were pretty early.
Yeah, I was about the same time, but my trip was just through the air.
Through the air, yes. I was on a ground war.
Yeah.
It's a long way.
That whole thing.
Yeah, the whole thing. So, yeah, we came back from Buffalo after the Bengals win 34-21.
Yes.
At Ralph Wilson Stadium. We saw our first snow of the year.
Yeah.
Wintry mix. Yeah. Wintry mix. I've decided that that's my phrase to say over and over again before we do our post-game videos when it's cold. Wintry mix. Wintry mix. How now, brown cow? How now, right. Brown cow? because it was cold.
Yeah, it was.
It was cold. It's happening.
Because now it's 60 degrees this week again.
Yeah, it's going to be nice again. But that was the first cold day, cold game to get us prepared for what is about to happen. Because it's about to get cold. As you know, I mean, this is like old. That was nothing for you.
Yeah,
I mean,
no.
You're in Green Bay, Wisconsin. That's nothing.
Yeah, I was ready for the golf clubs.
Yeah, it was a fun trip, certainly all around. A different one, a unique one for me. Stealing 2 days off in the middle of the season is like highway robbery.
Yeah.
It doesn't even feel right to be able to do it. It's so rare, but just kind of the way it worked out with this trip and us being able to work ahead a little bit, I was able to go to Toronto for a couple of days. And then drove down to Buffalo, where my wife has a bunch of family there. Yeah. So we hung out there. You hung out at Grandma's basement.
Yeah, I did.
On Saturday night.
I found out that Grandma is not a fan of the read option.
No.
She believes if you're a quarterback, you should throw the ball.
You should throw the ball. The entire family that lives there in Buffalo is a little frustrated with inability to throw the ball.
Right.
As people voiced very openly once the drinks started flowing in Grandma's basement, as they do. But it was fun. We had a bunch of us. Doc came over. Our photographer extraordinaire, Kareem Elgazar, came over. It was a good crowd.
Yeah.
Good crowd.
Don't forget C. Trent.
C. Trent, that's right, out of the bullpen, man.
Yeah.
C. Trent is officially on the road. This is how you know that our Bengals coverage is serious. Either that or they're saying we're not good enough.
Yeah.
They called Trent over, and now he is doing all the road trips. Previously, he's been helping us out with home games.
Right.
Now they're going to – I'm Bengals fever, man.
Right.
Everybody's got it. So now Trent joining us on the road, so he'll be with us in Pittsburgh.
Right.
No family, no grandparents to have basement parties in there, but I'm sure we'll find something to do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so enjoyed Buffalo, first snow, wintry mix, Bengals win, another – Didn't this kind of just feel like one of those that was just inevitable? I mean, once they got through that first little hiccup on the opening drive, it was just sort of okay. Now here they go.
Yeah, it was really honestly only, you and I, we looked at each other in the press box after the first half when their average field position start was midfield, and they only scored three times.
Yep.
Right. And we were like, wow, this easily could have been 31-14 at the half. So it was really only the only question was like, well, did they let a bad team hang around too long? For me, I was like, well, I mean, this team has given up two turnovers for touchdowns. this year. So it's like, you know, I mean, they're one of those away from like Buffalo being crazy and being in it. And then they ran 90 yards down the field, scored a touchdown, and it was kind of, it was on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it was like, you know, I mean, but it felt like a blowout. It just wasn't there. So, you know.
It was, I mean, it's just one of those. That was not some run-of-the-mill, average to below-average defense that you could just take, that you just take advantage of, yeah. That you just slice and dice whenever you want to. That was one of the best defenses in football, but by the talent. Right. And Rex Ryan, one of the smartest defensive minds.
Right.
At notorious, famous for his defenses being, you know, advanced, shutting it down, the, you know, his centerpiece. And those two drives being the second half that essentially ended the game were just sliced and diced.
Right.
I mean, Ginsu, no issues at all. I mean, Marvin Jones, Tyler Eifert, A.J. Green gets in it. Scramble play by Dalton. Giovanni Bernard. Jeremy Hill. It was just
Ryan Hewitt.
Ryan Hewitt involved.
Right. Jake Fisher dropped the pass. He was wide open again.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's just becoming one of those things that, you know, I don't know that anyone is going to stop them. The Bengals, the blueprint to beat the Bengals now for me is a shootout. I don't think there's any other way to do it.
It's funny you say that because in the leaving Ralph Wilson Stadium with the aforementioned Kareem Al-Ghazar, with one of the better action photos you'll find of Giovanni Bernard just smiling like an idiot on the way to the end zone.
Yeah.
Just basically like, I can't believe nobody touched me.
Yeah, it was that easy.
Like, it was
Did
hilarious.
Did you see on that play, by the way, Whitworth and Bowling both pull? And Whitworth comes through and has no one to block.
Block, right.
I mean, that's how
And Andy
open
changed
it
that
was.
Play.
Yeah.
Yeah, he changed that all. But yeah, it was so we're in the car and it was fun. And well, I'm sure we'll get to this later. The seeds of concern we talked about last week on the BBP sort of reared their ugly head again against Buffalo. But Kareem's like, you know, I think someone's going to get this defense.
Yeah.
And he's like, but
they're being got right now by not great offense.
And then he said, but you know, that means someone's gonna have to score 45.
Yeah, probably.
And then I was like, well, in 2 weeks in Pittsburgh can drop 38 on this defense.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think this Bengals offense could drop 48 on them. So I mean, you know, it's just
I you know, and I think this is with the bye week now here, Bengals 6-0, one of five undefeated teams left. It's a good time to sit back and look at what this really means in the big picture. So I think we've established in the first 6 weeks that we don't have to whisper the word Super Bowl contender anymore. You can say that. That's apparent. I mean, this is one of the best offenses in the franchise history, and it's amongst the best in football this year. I mean, they ranked number one in yards per play, I believe. Definitely number one in yards per pass play. I mean, they do it. They're doing it all. They're doing it very well. There are the New England Patriots and the Denver Broncos. The Denver Broncos, who are the opposite of the Bengals.
Right.
Their offense is a concern. Although I would say their offense is more than just a seed of concern. Their offense is in bad shape.
Yes.
Peyton Manning has been bad for a long time now.
Yeah.
And it's showing up, and they just aren't scoring. Their defense and special teams has more touchdowns than their offense does.
Yeah.
And then you have the Patriots, who are the Patriots, who are on the Tom Brady revenge tour and have been hammering everybody in sight. But thanks to the dumbest play in NFL history, you know, Indianapolis was right there and could have maybe taken them. And that's a bad and not a great Indianapolis team, as we've seen this year. They have a secondary that does not have Darrell Revis or Brandon Browner anymore.
No.
They have Malcolm Butler as their number one corner, and Malcolm Butler is an undrafted rookie last year before he became Super Bowl hero extraordinaire. So my point being that we talk about the Bengals with these issues, but their primary competition in not just the AFC but really across the NFL have holes as well.
Oh, yeah, Green Bay too.
Green Bay.
I mean, in Carolina, you know.
has no receivers.
No, and I understand that they beat Seattle, and Earl Thomas had to come out and be like, we don't suck. But you know what? You're kind of rolling down that path of being like,
maybe they suck.
Yeah, so... No, you're right. There are no perfect teams in the current NFL, but the Bengals are. I can't say they're the best because I still got a roll. I don't know if I would change my power rankings from a week ago of the undefeateds.
Yeah,
I still think I'd put them three behind the Packers.
Yeah,
just because I, you know, Andrew Whitworth was asked on Tuesday. Like, has Andy Dalton catapulted himself into Tom Brady, Peyton Manning? I heard this question.
Yeah.
Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, like, Philip Rivers, rarefied air, and Witt was like, well, he's playing good in 2015. You know, those guys have done it.
Yeah.
So because of that, I go with, you know, the two QBs.
Because what Rodgers has done, yeah. Although their defense, what was it, 500 and
yeah, no, there's holes. Their offensive line's not good. They got to – I'm really just sort of laying it at the feet of the quarterbacking god.
But understandable. You know, so. But I want to put the focus on the AFC
yes.
right now because, you know, and what I sort of wrote about in Monday's walkthrough and that I think will be the theme of the next 2 weeks here is this season has now set itself up for Bengals Steelers again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cleared itself out. The Ravens are abysmal.
Yep.
I mean, wheels completely off train in the, you know, the it's gone into the Clint Eastwood ravine from Back to the
John Future. Harbaugh running his way to college.
Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever else is going
to. Let's go to USC. Get me out of here. I'm going to schedule Michigan. So, so you've got, and Clevelanding themselves, although nearly beating Denver at home, but then doing as they do and making it a nearly instead of a win.
And Johnny Football doing Johnny Football things. Yeah, it's the Browns.
So you then have this Steelers team now that
unbelievably
is 4-2 and has maybe found their temporary replacement in Landry Jones after Michael Vick has dirt in his eye at first after a concussion and then a hamstring and he comes out and then Landry comes in and just tears it up and finds Martavis Bryant twice for two touchdowns. Big day for him. This Pittsburgh defense, while everyone's been focusing on what's the offense going to do, has been keeping them in games.
Yes.
And this young Pittsburgh defense that was supposed to be this weakness, that has been their weakness for a few years now as they've tried to transfer it over from the old guard of Polamalu and all those guys and Kiesel and all those guys to this new young group, has suddenly sort of grown into itself a little bit. And that becomes a scary thing when you consider they still have not played a single game this year with Ben, Martavis Bryant, Le'Veon Bell, and Antonio Brown all together. And Marquise Pouncey.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Who will be playing together very soon, possibly, well, not Pouncey, but the other four.
Right.
On November 1st when the Bengals go to Heinz Field, which has always been a house of horrors for them.
Right.
Here we are again. Bengals 6-0, Steelers 4-2, just as it has been for a few years now. And I, you know, we can talk as much as we want to about, and I've turned this into a very long diatribe. I don't know why I continue to talk, but we can talk as much as we want to about this being about New England and Denver and talking about power rankings, getting all excited. This is about Bengals Steelers in so many ways.
Yeah, and it's funny because you know, Marvin Lewis heading into bye week, his weekly meeting with the media, said, you know, it's not about the Steelers this week; it's about us and self reflection, self evaluation. However, on Sunday afternoon, when I asked him about, hey, can you put 6-0 in context? What does it mean? And he allowed that, you know, he allowed his team to have some semblance of like happiness with it. And but in that answer, said we can put the hammer down. Mm-hmm. And I think he would probably say, well, I mean, you know, the final 12 weeks of the season, 11 weeks of the season. To me, I mean that as like he knows what's in front of him, Pittsburgh.
Yep.
If you go to Pittsburgh and win and you're 7-0 and they're 4-3, it sends, not only does it send statements, but you essentially win the division.
Come close to it.
I mean, you'd have a three-game lead in the loss column with, you know, 3 to play or whatever in the division.
And so to me, I swear this one's not going to be as long as the last one. To me, the Steelers game can be, I probably should save this for next week because it's going to be good stuff. Can we just re-rack this next week and not?
Yeah, why not? Take the week off.
The Steelers game will be the one that would make me believe in this team being different. Because it's always the game that defines whether this team is where it needs to be. And this is under the assumption that Ben plays. Under the assumption that Ben Roethlisberger is the quarterback.
Right.
And relatively healthy, not out there hobbling around Willis Reed style.
Right.
On November 1st, and the Bengals can go there and win. That would be the one that would make me say this is the year they make the run. I think that is – I'm willing to go that I'm pretty close to that. Doc wrote, I think, it was either yesterday's column or this morning or something like that about how – well, I don't know what you're holding on to if you're not believing in this team right now. And I think you're still holding on to the fact that history is what it is in the playoffs and everything looks, smells, feels different this year primarily because of what 14 is doing.
Right.
That's fair. But you still the Steelers set up because of the weapons they have, because of what they have meant to this Bengals franchise when they have overcome things, it's had to go through Pittsburgh.
Right.
And winning in Pittsburgh is the ultimate sign of respect because Marvin Lewis is from there and everything is built
right
in that image of that's the type of franchise they want to be.
Right.
So they want to when they beat them, it means they're doing something serious. That was the one that would make me stand up and say, okay, I think this is it. See, I think this is the team that makes the run.
That's interesting to me because from the outside, I look at this Bengals franchise that has won AFC North titles.
Sure.
In the recent past, which means they beat. I mean, they finished with a better record than the Steelers. I understand the Kimo von Olhoffen game and you know the playoffs matter in that regard. So I get it. I don't know if a loss in Pittsburgh, even if Jarvis Landry is there, and I don't know if that would prevent me from saying, you know, this isn't the team that makes a run and goes 12-4 and wins a division because they lost on November 1st. You know what I mean? But I get what you're saying.
Though, no, but I feel like they've proven so much that they belong on the precipice of that conversation right now and in Heinz Field because of what has always happened to this team there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just –
yeah.
It's when always
you edit, right.
Just get their butts – it's not just losing. It's how they lose. It's looking physically dominated. It's Kevin Huber getting blown up. It's Antonio Brown running kicks back. It's embarrassments like that.
Yeah.
That make you say that's the one regular season step that they have to take. They have other big games that they'll play. They go to Denver. They go to Arizona, you know, who's, you know, we still think those teams are very good. St. Louis is very good. And then they have two games against Pittsburgh. And the rest of the games, they're scheduled the rest of the way out from what we know of where everything sits. It's such a haves and have-nots.
Right.
Where you've got twice with the Browns, you got another Ravens game.
Houston.
And in your house. And, you know, god awful Houston Texans, even though they beat my Jacksonville Jaguars. Jesus. Yeah. I got to take out a loan for this precinct bet.
Right.
Because I'm paying it now. You can't lose to the Bucks and then the Texans at home in back to back weeks. Not if I'm going to be, you know, not paying for this precinct stake. Anyway, sorry. So, you know, the Texans come here. You know, you've just got these games that are that they should win. If they continue like they have been this year, which is beating teams that they're far better than.
Right.
So that, to me, it just leaves those Steelers games hanging out there as the ones.
Yeah.
And if Pittsburgh can get this first one, and they could only be a half game back at that point.
You're right. Yeah, it's.
So, I mean, I'm just saying, we may have thought about counting them out when the Roethlisberger thing happened, but that was under the understanding that the Bengals would extend their lead over this time period, and then you get Le'Veon Bell on fourth and a walk-off in San Diego, and then you get Landry Jones experiment that gets a win that I don't think we had them getting against Arizona.
Right. Although someone in this room thought they'd win at least two games when Ben was out.
Someone did.
Yeah.
I think I said two.
Did you?
I might have said two.
I don't remember.
I don't remember either. We'll have to check the tape on that one. Anyone,
Doc didn't. We'll throw Doc under the bus. Doc only thought they'd win one game out of the four with Ben. If we thought Ben White had been out
that's
four
cause
games.
That's because his son is a bitter Pittsburgh fan, and he just hears all the negativity all the time. I mean,
it's unbelievable that they've pulled out these last two games.
The San Diego game in particular.
It's just unbelievable.
Stop shotgun snapping from inches away from anything, people. The Wildcat decision, you know how much they would be getting hammered right now if Le'Veon Bell comes up short and you're an inch away and you go Wildcat to him? I don't care that it got in.
That's the thing to me where even if a Hobbly Ben comes back, I'll tell people right now. I mean, I'll give you 2 weeks in advance. I don't see the Bengals losing that game. Even if Ben is, you know, tries to Willis Reed it, and I understand there's all this history. So I don't really get into all that stuff. I mean, I think they'd win. I'd take the over for entertainment purposes.
Yeah.
Whatever that may be. But I think this Pittsburgh team, not having a bye, they have to play yet another game this coming week while the Bengals rest up and get ready. I know you need to see it to believe it.
I do. Guess what I have seen
and
have believed.
And I'm only been around this team. So that's kind of where we've differed over the PBP over the year.
Yeah, I wrote about this last year, and I thought it was really interesting. Maybe this is where he's coming from. It kind of made me look bad. But I wrote about how the Bengals, the worm was turning on their relationship with the Steelers, so to speak. Prior to, they had two games in amongst the last four last year were against the Steelers, and the Bengals, as battered as they were, could win the division. It turned out they only needed to win one of those two games against the Steelers, and they would have won the division and would have hosted a playoff game. You know, who knows what would have happened. But they didn't. They lost 42-21 in Paul Brown Stadium in a game that they had right there. And, you know, you have one bad decision and one bomb to Martavis Bryant, and it was over in a heartbeat. And then, obviously, the play, with A.J. Green, fumble, concussion, season over, essentially, in Pittsburgh. And it was like Pittsburgh just ripped back to the reminding of what they are in this division to this team and what they have been. But the Bengals' biggest wins have always been in Pittsburgh. In the 2005 podcast series, to a man, everybody I talked to, whether it was on the podcast or just for background, at Pittsburgh was the game that meant more because of who they are and because of the way that they dominate this division and the style that they play. And I think that still very much exists today because of what Big Ben is. He's the best quarterback in the division. And Mike Tomlin's arguably, I would say, the best coach in the division.
Yeah.
And that's what matters in football. And, you know, the Bengals now have a chance to go in there and have a 2005 type of moment.
I can go with that because they haven't. While I think, you know, nationally, the Seahawks comeback will be the turning point. That's when everyone decided to pay attention. That's when everyone, you know, from the national level,
stop saying same old Bengals.
Around, and that's legit. I mean, even if the Seahawks sort of fall off, which honestly they're probably due for, just by the math of football and two Super Bowl runs.
Yeah,
they're still good at the time, and you know to do that. But no, I can roll with you on that one. That Pittsburgh is winning there, and what it would mean in a whole lot of ways, you know, would be
huge.
Would be
huge because I think at that point, you know, like you said, I mean, you do start to think about how close you are to essentially wrapping a division because then they have to come to you after that, and you get Browns Texans after that. So you are at that point staring 9-0 in the face.
Right.
And I'm thinking about how I told Kareem that I would fly him.
You make a lot of bad, man, this is bad just, wagers.
It really has
long-term
been like
season
that.
Decisions. Yeah.
Well, I told him I would fly him if they were 12-0 in December because he said, "What do we do in December? Are we going to fly?" So I will pay to fly you If they're 12, we're going to start.
Okay, BBP listeners, we're going to start a GoFundMe.
GoFundMe for all Paul's bad bets. I need a Kickstarter. Seriously, help me out. Help me out, man. Oh, gosh, awful. So anyway, so let's flip forward to a couple other topics. And I do want to bring some audio in here in a minute. Oh, we have a Geno Speaks.
We do.
We have a Geno Speaks, Jim, the Geno Whisperer, of course, had his moment, as he does after every game, where he attempts to get a quote from Geno Atkins. Typically is it's abruptly declined.
Right.
Or some sort of mumble is given. well, this week we have an actual four sentences.
Yes.
They didn't say they were good, but they're four sentences. And so we have Geno Speaks, the Geno Whisperer strikes again, Jim Ossarski, after the Bengals beat the Bills in Buffalo.
Coach said it's a huge sense of accomplishment. I imagine that, I mean, this is what's in front of you, six games, but to get it done and to be in this spot. Does it feel good, I guess, to know you're going to the bye having won each challenge put in front of you?
Yeah, it feels good to win.
Is there, coming on the road, AFC, I mean, new quarterback, as Carlos said there, scripted first 15 plays. What maybe changed for you guys as a front to get off the field on third downs to be able to stop whatever momentum they had early?
We got settled.
Okay. Is it a communication thing, or is it just getting a feel for McCoy?
We got settled. I mean, they did their scripts, and then we kind of got back and did what we usually do, play Bengal defense.
Okay. You guys up front have gotten a lot of pressure. In a game like this, is it more about containment and gap discipline with a guy like Manuel as opposed to just straight up,
playing team defense.
Okay. And then just finally, I guess, and again, and going back to Marvin kind of laughed. He's like, we have bigger things to do than these little markers along the way. But again, this sort of start hasn't been seen in Cincinnati. It's only twice since 1968. I mean, do you guys sense that at all? That the city or that you guys are doing something special? Or can you not even think about that until?
We'll just say in one game at a time.
Thank you.
All hail the Geno Whisperer. Amazing. Amazing He's work great. You're doing over
here's,
here.
And here's the funny thing is usually, and we like to, and we'll get way deep into the Bengals locker room.
Oh, God.
Post-game.
Easy.
But, that was the BBP. We try to bring you inside our world. And usually when Paul and I or Trent or Doc or the other beat writers go to a player, the camera, the hordes follow. I mean, it's sort of the unspoken. It's not just us. I mean, that's beat writers throughout the country because other people understand that we get guys to talk and, whatever. This was an instance where I had Geno Atkins, and Geno decided to stand for those questions as opposed to his usual walk out the door.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of like
trying to chase him down
and not like run into walls and windows and other whatever. And no one else came. It was just Geno and I, and like Carlos Dunlap and guy, of course, and I understand that Geno didn't have his usual Geno game. But it was just sort of funny to me.
Yeah.
That like other people were just like, you know what, we'll let you
go ahead.
We'll let you do that and
we're just
which
not
is fine.
Intense.
You know what?
It's great.
It's something between BBP listeners and us.
And Geno.
there are some
I want to start taking a picture of you standing next to Geno's locker like every week. Just Jim awaits his latest attempt as the Geno Whisperer.
You know what? I think and listeners, you can get at me on Twitter at Jim Ozarski at Paul Daner Jr. and let me know if I did a little better this week with the questions.
Yeah.
Because I think that's part of it. Like he doesn't suffer bad questions, and I still don't think I've got like great ones, although because he didn't like run me into a wall, I think I was able to ask a couple follow-ups that led to two sentences.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You've worked hard for those sentences.
Yeah, I got to be better, but it's just, oh.
They settled, they settled down.
Yeah.
And that's important to know.
Trying.
You are trying.
By week,
I will say, you want to know, you're winning people over. I got a text from my dad who said, Jim got Geno to talk. it was just like, people care about your quest, man. They do. They care about your quest because they know that you just want to talk. That's all.
I do.
Just have a conversation. So I wanna spin forward into another topic, which is that of, speaking of people Jim wants to talk to, Vontaze Burfict,
yeah.
Who you, of course, had the scoops with earlier this year, talking to him before anybody else did about his mindset in his rehab. And at that point in time, I think we all were kind of under a different mindset of where he was at and what to expect for his return. And that was primarily because of what we heard from Marvin Lewis on Cutdown Day about sitting down with Vontaze Burfict and how it was a very tough decision, and they wanted to just, rather than maybe fudge it, as he said at that time, and try to sneak him back a few games early because they maybe could, they wanted to make sure that he was 100% when they brought him back, and basically said, in not so many words, that would be 100% back ready to go against Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Which is the next game.
It was definitive. It actually was like way more definitive than anyone would have imagined.
Yeah. Because if it was that far out, it wouldn't have been a difficult decision at all.
Right.
It wouldn't have been needed to be anything you really even discuss at length.
Right.
Especially not someone like Marvin Lewis, especially not with that topic, which he's been so careful about forever.
Right.
So that made us all, I wouldn't even say assume, have heard that Vontaze Burfict will be back against Pittsburgh. He will return and he'll start. Not that he would come back and be the starting linebacker and play 80 snaps, but he would be back and then they'd start working him in. That doesn't seem to be the case anymore.
No, it's interesting because we don't see all of practice. He's not allowed to practice on PUP. He's been out on the side fields, as we've seen, just in warm-ups and so nothing different, but like when Marvin was asked about it in this run-up to the bye week, because per NFL rules, Vontaze Burfict and Cedric Obwehi, Sean Porter are technically eligible to practice this week of this BBP,
right?
If there would have been practice. And Marvin went from almost effusive to Vontaze has done all these things, he's going to be ready to go, to we'll see.
Yep.
Which, and then when we sort of pressed him on it again just before the Buffalo game, flat out said there's no activation of any kind during the bye week, which he didn't need. They wouldn't need to do that anyway.
Yeah.
But I mean, just again, he wouldn't rule anyone out for Pittsburgh. But it sounded more of like the gamesmanship, Marvin, as opposed to the guy who was so sure of it back in August.
Yeah.
It was like it was a different tone,
and I think it has been. And we talked to lots of people and trying to gather everything to bring you guys the information. And I think that same more reserved tone has been heard across the board with this. That maybe we overestimated this a little bit, and that it's not quite where they wanted it to be, and. To me, from this chair, in my opinion, for whatever that's worth to anybody, this is me speaking, this team needs to, and pretty much I think has realized that Vontaze Burfict's effect this season is as someone who can help them and help affect games in December and January, and that anything before that has very little relevance, and that they have to focus it on him just being able to be an effective player in some capacity, and maybe not even in a full capacity at all this year, in some capacity in December and January. And that's where that's at right now. Because once he even does get cleared, then you get into the football conditioning.
Right.
So you pretty much needed a preseason
on
top. So now you need another month. So even if he did come back on November 1st, which is very much up in the air, you would then be looking at December until you really felt like he was back in any kind of condition to be playing a decent amount of snaps. He probably would play I couldn't see him playing more than 20 snaps in his first game, really? Whenever that is.
Right, which he even said, you know, when I talked to him back when he was placed on PUP, I mean, he flat out said, he's like, look, I haven't played in a year. There's no way I could play 70 snaps.
Yeah.
So he was upfront and honest about that. But you're right. I mean, so just real quick for people, and we've written about this, but we can't assume everyone reads everything. He technically, how do we say this, can practice, and I'm doing air quotes that you can't see.
Yeah.
Under a roster exemption, the Bengals are allowed to find out what he can do this next week in the run-up to Pittsburgh. So if you see us tweeting, Vontaze Burfict's out on the field, it doesn't mean he's going to play. It doesn't mean he's going to be activated. They are allowed to find out.
But they get into the three-week window at that point.
Roster exemption will allow him to to be out on the field and not have a decision made. So,
right.
So per Bengals front office. They can work him out, essentially. See where he's at before they make any sort of decision and put him on the clock. But you're right, Paul. It's just... And I think, honestly, maybe the start will help. I mean, if he was ready to go, he'll be ready to go. But I think if they're sitting at 6-0 and, you know, Vinny Ray's ankle heals up in a couple weeks.
Which,
I mean,
it appears it's not serious.
Yeah. And you know, they need Vontaze Burfict. He is an upgrade for sure. But it's one of those things, I think, I don't know, not that you rush guys back, but winning and leads, that helps.
It does help.
It helps.
Because, and to exactly your point, if this team is, say, 3-3 right now instead of 6-0, how much more important to just getting to those game-changing January games are these now?
Right.
But I think this team has come pretty close to assuring they're going to be playing in a January game. It's just a matter of which one.
Right.
When you know that, when you have built in that luxury, you now can be a little more careful with trying to get Burfict back and do exactly what I said. Focus on him being a game changer in December and January.
Right.
And keep that now as the new goal because of what they have done. Right. I think it's afforded them that luxury a little bit. What else do we want to bring you? Where are we at here? Okay, we've got a little bit more time.
Yeah.
You wanna hop into Nudegate? Are we gonna do this?
We got to address it. Everybody's been waiting for it, Paul.
I know. Yeah. Well, I hope not. I hope that you weren't sitting around waiting for us to talk about Bengals players' butts on television.
Well. See, that's the thing. People they just got off the treadmill and they're going into the shower now.
Yeah.
So they're
ready.
They're
just hoping that there's no cameras around. here's what I want to do. I do want to talk about it because I don't know that many people care. They think it's funny. Right?
Yeah.
You know, oh, in case you see what happened was basically on NFL Network on Sunday, they do a live show that includes taped interviews from locker rooms right after the games happen. So they want to get them up quick and, you know, feed them up onto the show. So after the game, interview with Adam Jones in the locker room. Happened to go across the locker room, which is pretty much the ultimate no-no. Everyone knows it. It's not a secret. And there's just, I mean, as I've joked a couple of times, it was like a scene from Eyes Wide Shut, just naked bodies in the background everywhere. Yeah. I mean, butts and everything.
Yeah.
At one point, Chris Lewis Harris is kind of looking like, okay, the camera's on me and I'm just sitting here. I was going to take my towel off, but what do I do here? Anyway. Andrew Whitworth was amongst those. Hard to miss.
Right.
Very tall, 320-some, 30-pound man.
Yeah.
Naked.
Yep.
In the background. I mean, and so it kind of caught on. Deadspin, of course.
Right.
All over it.
Right.
It only aired one time until they realized what had happened, which how they didn't realize before that is completely beyond me. But so it brought up this whole topic of Bengal, you know, players in the NFL now having to deal with being naked. And Andrew Whitworth said, you know, it's not really as much about this incident, although he did pretty much demand an apology and all that. It's about more than that. It's about an NFL policy of open locker rooms in general.
Right.
So I feel like we try to take you behind the scenes into our job, into covering this team and what goes on a daily basis. And this has become a pretty popular topic because of this incident of open locker rooms.
Right.
And it's Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. It is mandated every team must open the locker room where media can go in and intermix with players
right.
for 45 minutes after games. Locker rooms open for 45 minutes after a 10-minute cooling down period.
Right.
That's just the way it is. It's in all, every professional sport, men's professional sport here, and the WNBA right. also has a 10-minute cooling down period and then a 30-minute open locker room after games, so it's right. the same for women. Andrew Orth has says he's stumped about this before, doesn't like this policy. Here is him discussing that point of view, and I just think it's an interesting topic of discussion about sports, the media, and nudity. Anyway, here you go. Here's Andrew Whitworth.
Not what we expect to be talking to you about today, but a little different experience. What, just kind of just generally your reaction to what ended up out there?
You know, I think for me personally, I mean, it's not like it bothers me personally, but for being a guy that has been a player rep and a guy that has always been against this policy, I think it's just a great example of why the open media room policy it's old and needs to change. I mean, you can't judge us off of who we will and won't accept in our locker room and say all these things that we have to do, but then also put us in a situation where every single day I have to change clothes and be naked or not in front of media. And it's just not right. There's no office. There's no other situation in America where you have to do that. And it's dated and it's old and it needs to change.
What would you suggest?
Well, I mean, the last time I checked, every NFL stadium is a pretty big place. So I think there's some other places that we could do interviews other than where I'm standing and I'm naked. So there's a lot of places. There's hallways. There's rooms. I could show you about 50 in this building alone. The interviews could be conducted and players could be requested to go, just like I did when I was in college. Just like I did everywhere else that I've played sports. For some reason in the NFL, we continue to stand by the policy that you come in the locker room, and it's not right. So,
have you heard from the network yet?
No, I mean, I've heard nothing other than I'm sure that they'll say they're sorry through our media or something and won't issue a public apology, but that won't be good enough. So this is a big issue to me. I've pressed this issue before with our union and the fact that I think it's wrong. This is my office space. I shouldn't have to change in it and be in front of people that I don't know or really don't have any purpose of being near me other than the fact that they're interviewing other people. And if I was a woman, this would be a complete different subject and it'd be a firestorm. You know, we can't always just serve women and everyone else. Men deserve a right, too. We have rights. We have privacy. We deserve all the things we want as well. So as a man, I think it's right that the policy's changed.
Have you been told in the past when you brought this up why they're not changing it?
You know, usually it's the excuse of access. But to me, that's just, an excuse. It's a dated excuse. I mean, there's a hallway right there that leads out of the building. All you'd have to do is say that players leave through that hallway and media could be in it and interview who they want or pull who they want aside. I mean, no different than what the coaches get when we come off a practice field. You can grab them and have access to them. So it could easily happen. You know, unless you're a quarterback or a star player who gets to go on a press conference, you have to sit in a room I've multiple times witnessed guys who are butt naked who are about to do an interview after a game or anything else. I mean, the fact of the matter is we're put in that situation every single week, and I just don't think it's right. Now, for me personally and, you know, my wife and all that, I mean, we're fine. But, you know, I think of it as if I had my daughter right now, Sarah, who's 16, and she had to go to high school and listen to all the crap that's going on today in the media about me being naked on camera, whatever would happen to her to ridicule or mock her, that's the way I see it. And as a father and a man, it's wrong.
You know, I think you hear that, and I don't know, you can tell me if I'm wrong. And I wouldn't – there's a lot of elements to what he's saying that I absolutely agree with. I mean, there should be easier ways to do it. It is compromising for these guys sometimes.
Right.
I mean, you know, you can stay covered up if you really wanted to. But it can be a bit awkward for everyone, yeah. Especially in these tight visiting locker rooms and stuff like that.
That's the issue. That's a funny thing, and it wasn't sort of the place to get into it. But The visiting locker room is the issue, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Having been, especially on the road in the NBA, visiting locker rooms, you're talking about, now granted there's only 15 of them, but they're all 6'6 to 6'11 or 7'1. And they're just so huge, tall men in little tiny places. It's just that's the issue to me, because it just, they're just smaller.
Yeah,
you know, but I get his point. You know, it was definitely, it's not a common occurrence.
Yeah, it's not. No, I mean,
because TV people kind of like pay attention, or usually.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen. I know, even just us in there, when we shoot our occasional,
right,
you know, iPhone videos just of somebody talking, I mean, always making 100% sure that I'm shooting up, or
right,
trying to make sure that I would never post anything that had anybody in the background, right, doing anything. You just know that.
Right.
That's why it's unfathomable what happened, right, on the film, yeah, network. Which, by the way, anybody that listens to BBP knows how big of fans we are of the NFL,
right,
media production, right, teams. But, you know, just how that happens on a taped segment.
Yeah, it was such
that
a
that means you had to have been seen at least four or five times, right, by different people, and they still were like, oh, yeah, run it, and didn't, yeah, dump out of it.
Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, but I think the discussion is interesting. You know, in the Premier League in Europe, there is almost no media access.
Right.
I mean, ever. That no one's allowed in the locker room. No players don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
There's no hardly any mandate. You get nothing but awkward, contentious interviews between a, right, single interviewer and a manager.
Right.
If you ever watch Premier League, I remember thinking, God, these manager interviews are always so combative.
Right.
That's because the players and the teams hold all the power, because, right, there's never any time where it's just a natural,
right,
thing. It's this forced thing that they just basically just bark at these,
right,
interviewers and don't give the answer any of their questions, and then the players don't have to do anything, and,
right,
they have nothing but these mixing zones after games. So it's like they would just walk by, basically. Well, you covered a friendly
in Milwaukee, yeah,
right? Yeah,
between Chivas and I forget, the it was an MLS team. I was a Chicago Fire, and whatever. But yeah, it was sort of the same thing. It was the same setup where the locker rooms were off limits, and they set up sort of a barricade, and it was up to the player to stop.
Yeah.
And, you know, a couple of them got it, that it was a friendly in this weird environment, and it was in a baseball stadium and all this stuff. So a couple stopped. And then other guys were like, eh, you know.
Yeah.
Just went I'm watching this. I'm like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever been a part of.
Yeah. Because and you know what?
I'm like, this served no one any purpose. Like, it didn't, you know what I mean? I was like, why am I down here?
Mm-hmm. And I don't know. In this new age, you know, we are less necessary in order for the players to get any messages they want out. In that respect,
right,
because social media, they all have Twitter. I mean, these guys can break any news they want to themselves on their own social media accounts. Many do. You know, Derek Jeter starts the Players Tribune to give people place for these like long form things about their lives and all that stuff. Just so I think, and the more powerful the players and the NFL beast becomes, the less and less they feel like they need everybody else,
right,
and so they feel like, that's where why it's an old policy that needs to change. Get them out of here, because we can control our own message. But that's part of the problem, is you can't. It's you know, you can't let teams be able to get away with whatever they want to and keep it in house, because they, right, will.
Well, but what's funny about that is this is the in house network.
Yeah, they can't sue themselves,
right?
Yeah, which is amazing.
You know what I mean?
That started this, but his,
right,
I mean, his point is not about this incident as much as the policy in general of having, whether cameras or not, of just having to change around people. I don't know. Locker rooms are weird, people. Like, it's just a weird thing, but that's the only regular, normal hangout gather place around.
Yeah, and today was, I would love to talk to Witt about this. I mean, the television camera people were around today to talk to him, and that was fine. This is more their fight. And I understand we were sort of thrown into the mix as, like, media in general. But, I mean, his ideas of put us in the hallway, put us out in this room. You know, we did this in college, but the NFL is different because we have to talk. And if the media requests you, you need to go out and blah, blah, blah. And I get that, but it doesn't – the job doesn't work that way.
Yep.
And there's just some inherent flaw, like huge flaws in that, yes, in terms of just gathering information and all that stuff. So, and I think honestly, like, I mean, you've known Witt longer, of course, than I have. I think if we were to talk to him, and the beef, I think, is more with the cameras, in my opinion. I know he said, and he blanketed everyone. He said, look, I'm getting dressed in front of everybody. That includes non-camera people.
Yes.
But like that's, I'll be honest, I mean, people in the locker room, like, guys come out and can get changed and shower and no one would ever see them.
Yeah.
Because either A, we're not paying attention. There's pillars and coolers and we're elsewhere with clothed individuals.
Yeah. Yes.
You know what I mean? So like, it's just, I get his point, you know. My office is.
You know what exchange? You know what compromise I'd be willing to make with this? We'll give you the locker room. You give us the cafeteria, and I only mainly because I want to eat their food. Like, we can't eat their food, and they get to eat in this other room that's just right in front of us, while we all have to order Jimmy John's every day, right?
And then that don't bring my sandwich.
And they don't bring Jim's sandwich.
They do not bring my sandwich.
And he gets angry, and then he comes on here and he turns into angry chinchilla Jim.
Yeah,
it's not good. that's all I'm saying. So I will say to Witt, if you let us go where we can hang out and eat with y'all and eat your food and just hang out in there, because you guys are all going to have to come eat and get food at some point, we can hang out in there, then I'm cool. You can have the locker room, man. I don't need that. Yeah. I'll just hang out by the buffet line and I'll talk to all you guys while you get your cantaloupe. Okay? That's what I'll do.
The shakes.
Oh, there's Paul. He always hangs out by the protein shakes away. Now all of a sudden no one's drinking their shakes because they don't want to talk to me.
And it's funny because, you know, we're having this conversation, and I get this. Like, I'm curious to hear what our BBP listeners think about this, because usually when there's a media story, like a reporter fights with a guy, and it's like, well, you don't need to be in there, and we don't need you in there. And that's the funny thing, because it's you do. Mm-hmm. We are – and I understand that Twitter and Instagram and guys can break their own news, and teams can, but that's the thing. We're the unbiased conduit.
We are between, you guys.
Right.
That's it. We're you guys in there. We're not Bengals.com.
Right.
Under the guise of the message.
Right.
We are you guys, because when things go wrong,
right,
when things spiral, someone needs to be in there asking those questions and getting after the people who you demand answers from.
Right. And it doesn't it's not as black and white and as nice as those guys want it to be and as we would want it to be sometimes. And it's just, it's unfortunate that this happened, especially in the manner that it did, with it being television, with it being on tape, with it being the in-house network. You know, we don't have this conversation at all in 2015 if this doesn't happen.
No.
None of these guys come out and say anything like this.
He said,
just out of nowhere.
It was just another opportunity for Witt to talk about this thing that he said he's talked about PA before, because he's a rep.
Right.
And it is. It's a players association thing that they would have to try to bring up, and it ain't.
No.
It's not going to change. The NFL is not going to change anything about their current media PR model, because guess what? Their revenues just continue to go through the roof. So they don't touch it.
Oh, yeah.
Don't touch the baby that's making all the money.
You know, it was good. Yeah. And it was, I mean, he was, it obviously, I mean, and rightfully so, it bothered him. And as you guys all heard, so it, you know, it'll go away.
Of course, we're not the ones that are naked on TV.
No.
So it's easy for us to say. You know what I mean? I don't like it when I have a weird screenshot of myself.
Right.
Okay, much less when I'm butt naked. All right, like, I mean, I'm firing off an email if I look weird in a screenshot of one of our videos.
Right,
But
you spend a lot of time emailing.
Which I do spend a lot of time emailing because I make a lot of weird faces. I'm very my hands are all over the place a lot of times. This is part of the problem. but that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's just that. I can't imagine if you feel like this thing that you, this beast that is your,
right?
You know, especially when he's with the PA and is constantly fighting that battle over everything,
right?
Has basically been the reason that they were in this situation because it's their network,
right?
And their rules, right? And all their stuff, and now I'm naked and haven't explained to my kids why I'm naked. Right. Dad's naked on TV,
right?
I'm just glad I'm not naked on TV. we all should be, absolutely. So, anyway, well, whew. That one flew by.
Yeah.
We kind of got we got topic heavy. We got into it.
Yeah.
Deep discussions.
Yeah.
So what do we want to go out on? We got naked stuff.
Super freak, man. Rick James.
We got to keep it going. We got to keep
Why not? Tie it together. Buffalo.
Yeah. Buffalo, man. Buffalo.
Nakedness.
Home
freakishness.
Of Rick James. I went with Cold Blooded.
Yeah.
With the song of the game because of the Bengals offense. But you're right. It's like,
I mean, you know,
Rick James was kind of a crazy kind of guy. Rick James would have embraced this policy.
I think so.
Rick James had been dancing naked behind Pac-Man. He'd have been loving it.
Right.
Oh, man. Just great stuff. So, yeah, I like Super Free. We can go out with that with our Ode to Buffalo, a fun trip to the Northeast.
Yeah.
In our first snow of the year. So, anyway, Jim, pleasure. Of course, we'll be back next week.
Yeah.
Bye weeks. We won't have game talk, but we will have plenty to talk about with the Steelers.
Right.
Coming in, so we'll have all that stuff for you and more. Remember, every single Tuesday we are here. We have Tuesday night at Moreline Lager House, Beyond the Stripes.
Very special edition.
Yes, the trifecta. Special teams dudes talking about special teams things.
Right.
That's right. Kevin so Huber, special. Mike Nugent, and Clark Harris will all be there. We're going to play Family Feud, which I am super jacked about.
Some Blazer game.
Maybe some Blazer game. Possible recreation of the Joe Reedy football to the face incident. I'm not going to make any promises. You're going to want to tune in for that one. And then the next Tuesday, so bye week.
So the week
leading into the Steelers game, Hugh Jackson is going to come down, and Hugh Jackson, who just put Doc in his place, the most just backhanded hot seat ever. Hugh Jackson just took it to Doc the last year. It was before the season started, and so we're going to get another view of that, which I am very much looking forward to. So come on down to Moreline, have some beers, chat with us. We look forward to it. And, all right, so we've got all that, and we have all our normal coverage, of course, throughout the weekend. Even though they're off, we don't quit, so we'll keep going. Anyway, let's get out of here. Rick James, thank you for joining us. She's a fairly freaky girl.
That's it. Word out.
Kinky. Girls are